Let me introduce you to Ken Levine. Actually, you know Ken's name because you've seen it on your TV screens a lot in the last three decades. He was involved with a couple of obscure little TV shows you might have heard of, like MASH and Cheers and Frasier and Wings and The Simpsons and Everybody Loves Raymond and Becker and Dharma and Greg. He's either been a writer or a producer or director on each of those shows through the years, sometimes being a hyphenate, doing more than one of those responsibilities on those shows. I've known of Ken's work for a long time, but I've really gotten to enjoy him online in the last couple of years. He started up his own blog called By Ken Levine, which I've been reading on a regular basis. And I also read a memoir that he wrote several years ago about leaving behind the world of Hollywood to become a Major League Baseball play-by-play guy on the radio. He did that for the Baltimore Orioles, Seattle Mariners, and San Diego Padres. Ken Levine joins me here this afternoon on KMOX. That's a heck of a resume right there.
Yeah, thank you. I'm proud to know me.
How's the strike doing for you?
Well, this is actually a good day to talk to you because I don't have to pick it. We don't pick it on Friday afternoons.
Well, that's good.
But, yeah, I've been out there in front of 20th Century Fox for 3-4 hours a day with my sign. Elvis Costello was actually with us a couple of days ago. That was pretty cool.
That is cool. Did he bring his guitar?
No, he did not bring his guitar, and he did not bring Diana Krall.
Uh-huh.
But still, it was kind of fun to see him.
Do you have celebrities just stopping by? You can't write for any of these shows, but you've got your own guest stars.
Yeah, we do. Since the Screen Actors Guild is completely in unison with us and the Writers Guild, they have been very supportive, and we've had a lot of actors and actresses who have joined us on the line. I'm trying to think of her name. I'm blanking. Julia Louise Dreyfus,
uh-huh.
And Mary Louise Parker. I mean, they all run together to me.
You only take three named actresses, is that it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Mary Tyler Moore will be marching in.
I'm sorry, Charlize Theron, you may not march today. You only have two names.
Exactly. If you want a middle name, we're the Writers Guild, and we can give you one. We can come up with one. How about Phoebe?
Charlize Phoebe Theron,
yeah.
Please come march with us now.
Yeah.
What about this deal that the Directors Guild made yesterday with the studios? How does that affect you?
Well, I don't know yet because we're still analyzing the deal to see whether or not it's something that we would agree to as well. But just looking on it, at first blush, there seem to be some problems. One of the issues is the whole internet streaming situation. And remember, the Directors Guild and the Writers Guild have different priorities. For the Directors Guild, residuals is not that big a deal. For the Writers Guild, it pretty much is the future of our union. But the way the Directors Guild is structured, as I understand it, if you direct a show like Lost, okay, and if Lost is rerun on ABC, you make $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now,
just making a little note to myself here, direct an episode
direct
of Lost
episode
and have
Lost.
It rerun.
And you get to go to Hawaii. It's a win-win.
Okay.
It really is. Okay. Now, if a network streams Lost, they have 17 days that they can stream it for free, and that's with commercials that is revenue that the network is making. They get that free for 17 days, and then the director gets $600 for them to stream it the next 26 weeks, and if they stream it an additional 26 weeks, he'll make an extra $600.
Mm-hmm.
So it means instead of $20,000, he might make $600. And I say might make because usually when shows are streamed, after the first week or so, people stop watching them. So the chances are that shows won't be available on the 17th day. And as a result of that, I think they're making nothing.
And in many of these cases, with a show like Lost, which you mentioned, It doesn't get rerun.
No, you know, it doesn't.
Lost and 24 and some of these other shows, they go through one season, and then they put it online a little bit during the season and a little bit afterwards, and then it's, hey, buy our big box set package with special commentary by Matthew Fox.
Right, and when you do, the writers and directors make basically nothing, a couple of pennies. So it's a big problem. I mean, I've been very lucky. All of those shows that you mentioned that I've worked on have all had a long life in reruns and syndication, and I am still making really good money from Cheers episodes that I wrote 25 years ago.
So you think the Directors Guild, well, maybe it's too early for you to tell whether it's good for the writers or bad for the writers, but does it push the writers back to the table with the studios?
Well, interestingly, it pushes the studios back to the tables with the writers. The writers have always been available, and it was the studios that walked off on December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that brings them back to the table, I think, is an encouraging sign.
Have you been filling up your time by watching things like American Gladiators and American Idol?
I have to admit, I do watch American Idol, but in the past, you mentioned my blog, I used to do a feature after the performance show every week of reviewing American Idol,
mm-hmm.
my snarky way. And it always gave me a larger audience. My traffic would go up by 1,000 people every time I did that.
I find the same thing on my blog. If I just mention American Idol or post an interview and say that in this discussion, you and I mentioned American Idol, boom, the Google hits go way up.
I know, exactly. And this year I said on the blog that I'm not going to review American Idol until the strike is over because I don't want to do anything to encourage American Idol and Fox to make all kinds of money.
Oh, I think the horse is out of the barn there.
But between you and me, I watch it.
But Ken, I think the horse is out of the barn on that. I mean, I think American Idol is going to do fantastically no matter what either of us says.
But you know what? Their numbers were down a little bit from what they've been the last 4 years, and that was against competition those last few years. Now they're up against The Biggest Loser on NBC, which I think there's a certain poetic justice to that. So I think the fact that I'm doing my own little part, it's like, you know, it's the little things you do
mm-hmm.
for global warming.
And one last thing about the strike. Do you have projects that you had been working on and then it was pencils down and so they're on hold now, or what's the status of those?
No, I have a project at FX. But it was in a holding pattern anyway.
Can you do your other job as producer during this strike, or is there nothing for you to produce?
You can, and one of the things that I think threw the studios and producers, you know, like 20th Century Fox and people like that, is that all of the showrunners, like 100 of them, en masse, decided, no, we're not going to go back and work on our shows.
Hmm.
I think the studios and networks just assumed, well, okay, there's 4 or 5 episodes that are filmed, and all they have to do is be edited and processed to go on the air. Well, a lot of those things are now just sitting because the producers, the showrunners, decided, no, we're going to do what we can to try to make some impact. You know, when we went out on strike in the past, it would be March 1st, which was like the end of the TV season. We'd be out on strike for 4 months before they even realized it.
When you're not coming into work, most people just, well, he's on a long vacation.
Exactly. Those guys never work anyway.
That's right. Ken, let me take a break, then we'll come back a little bit and talk about some of the things you've worked on in your career, some of these great sitcoms through the years, and a little bit of the process of behind-the-scenes Hollywood writing as well.
Cool.
Ken Levine, writer, producer, director, Major League Baseball announcer, blogger, here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. I'm Paul Harris, talking with TV writer, producer, director Ken Levine. I mentioned earlier he's been in the business writing pretty successful television for 3 decades. And several of those years spent on MASH, which ran for 11 seasons. And how many seasons did you actually work on, Ken?
I was on MASH for 4 years.
4 years in the middle of the run?
Yes. From year 5 to year 8.
I'm going to ask you about a couple of these episodes that I think I remember you writing about on your blog, and I have a couple of questions for you about them. One of them in particular was maybe one of the more famous episodes. It was the one with the clock on the screen, and it was like a half hour of real time for the characters in the half hour of the show that was airing. Were you involved in that one?
No, that one was right after us, and it was written by Alan. And there was so much medical stuff involved in that show that our technical advisor, Dr. Walt Deschel, actually got a shared writing credit on that episode.
When you had to come up with operating room scenes, did you actually know what to fill in on the page?
No, what we would do was just write in dummy dialogue. You know, nurse, hand me the frabazabber. You know, I think his biznix is hemorrhaging, you know, that kind of thing. And then we would just send it to Dr. Deschel, and he would fill it in. But after we did this week after week after week, eventually we started getting pretty good. I think I can perform a tracheotomy.
Well, you know,
if any of your listeners need a tracheotomy, and, you know, HMOs are terrible anyway.
Yes.
You know, give me a shot.
Well, you know, Father Mulcahy did one on the show. So why
That's
can't
right.
you?
That's right. Yes, and that was our year, actually. We were involved in that episode.
Now, tell me about that, because here you've got this this wonderful character actor, William Christopher, who's on the show as Father Mulcahy. And in some shows, he had virtually nothing to say except "Hi, Hawkeye." And in other shows, like that one, he was the centerpiece. When you're doing an ensemble show like that, is there pressure on you from the actors to put them in more scenes or more shows?
Well, they understand in an ensemble situation like this that there are going to be episodes where they're light. But what we promise them is there will be one or two each season where they will be the focal point of the series.
There is a classic episode where Radar O'Reilly leaves the show. It's, I think, a two-parter.
Yeah, we wrote that. Those were the last two episodes that we wrote on this series. And that was our goodbye also.
And when you say we, it's you.
I have a partner, David Isaac.
The two of you write together.
Right.
When you're writing a show like that, it was the last show you did also?
Yes.
So as a goodbye episode, how tough is that?
Well, it was really tough because he was going to leave the end of the seventh season. And CBS made a deal to bring him back for part of the eighth, and that he would leave during the November sweeps. So they wanted to turn it into a two-part episode. And we had originally plotted it out as a one-part. So we had to go back and rethink the whole thing and, you know, change the story. The only thing that really stayed the same from day one, in terms of our conception of how we would say goodbye to Radar, was the very end. We wanted him to have to leave with everybody busy and working in OR, which, number one, was real, and number two, it also spared us the long, maudlin goodbye speeches.
Mm-hmm.
We just hate those. So it was a situation where the characters would just exchange a quick couplet. In terms of Hawkeye, he just saluted, and Hawkeye saluted back, and Hawkeye never salutes anybody. And we loved the tag, the idea that Radar left his teddy bear, which I think is a great metaphor for growing up.
You also wrote an episode about a wounded soldier, and we see the entire episode from his perspective. What was the inspiration for that?
Well, it's an idea that I had, and I pitched it to the other people, and they thought, no, it's kind of ridiculous. But we're always looking to somehow break up the form, because unlike most series where the characters can evolve and they can marry each other, have kids, get divorced, and so you have, you know, new storylines. These people were pretty much stuck in time and place, and so the only thing we could do was try to find, like, once a year, some special, unique episode, like the clock on the screen, or in this case, through the point of view of the soldier. And there was a movie in the 40s called Lady of the Lake, and it was a Philip Marlowe movie starring Robert Montgomery. And it was done completely in this style. And so we screened the movie just to get an idea of what it might look like. And what we found was when the characters were talking to the screen, it was fine. But when Robert Montgomery was talking to the characters, then you just see them standing there staring uncomfortably at the camera. So I got the idea, well, what if the problem for the patient is that he has a problem with his throat and he can't talk? And that way we eliminate that problem, and it is just 25 minutes of people talking to him. And I think that was really the key to the episode.
Was it odd for the actors who normally are only interacting and looking at other actors?
Oh, absolutely, because actors are trained, TV actors and film actors are trained. You never look at the camera. You know, that's the last thing you do.
Yeah, unless you're doing a Gary Shandling show, no looking at the camera.
Right. It was very odd for them to do. Plus, not only do you have to look at the camera, but you have to relate to it emotionally. It was very difficult, and I give them credit. They all did a great job, and special credit goes to Charles Dubin, who was the director of that episode.
One of the things about MASH, because you're talking about war, is you can't do what other sitcoms do, which is a character leaves, and then a few years later, sometimes because an actor's career isn't going well, sometimes because it is going well, they reappear for a guest appearance. Well, you know, Henry Blake could never come back. He died.
Right.
Radar went home to Ottumwa, Iowa. Other characters left the show. Frank Burns went back to... he was never going to go back to Korea. But you were involved in After MASH, the show that took some of these characters from Korea and brought them to the United States, and it wasn't all that successful. Why do you think that is?
Well, first of all, let me say that the reason I got involved with After MASH was because Larry Gelbart, who created MASH, was going to be the creative force of that show. And the opportunity to work with Larry Gelbart was something that, we were not going to pass up. I mean, that's like learning how to pitch from Bob Gibson. So we all signed on, and the problem with After MASH was it was three second bananas. It was Jamie Farr and Harry Morgan and William Christopher, so second and third bananas, and they were put in a VA hospital back in Missouri, not exactly ripe for comedy, and it just never took off. I think it has one of the, if not the greatest, plunges in rating history. I think, opening night, we got like a 42 share, and I think it was down to a 19 by the end of the season. And they still renewed it. We were on for the second half of the second year.
What's interesting about it is that while that sequel didn't work, you did do another spin-off show that was very successful. We'll get to that and some other stuff with Ken Levine, Emmy-winning writer, director, producer. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.
Now, more of Paul Harris on News Talk 1120 KMOX.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Kelsey Grammer singing the theme song to Frasier, one of the most successful spinoffs in television history. Ken Levine was involved with that show and the show it spun off from, Cheers. Yeah, you add that to MASH and The Simpsons and Wings and the other projects he's worked on through the years, and it's a heck of a resume he's put together. Were you involved in the decision to spin Frasier off in the first place?
Well, I wasn't involved in the decision, but I was involved with the creators in working out the show, and the week of the pilot, I was there helping out and rewriting. I just want to mention one other thing. You know, you talked about MASH,
mm-hmm.
and one of the reasons that my partner and I were able to write for MASH was because we both had some experience in the military, and for me, that meant basic training at Fort Leonard Wood.
Oh, right here in Missouri. Yeah.
Right here in Missouri, right around this time of year. And so as you're giving that weather forecast, I was thinking to myself, oh, my God, that used to be me standing out there in some freezing conditions.
Yeah, January basic training, Fort Leonard Wood. Good memories, huh, Ken?
Oh, yeah, Little Korea, they used to call it.
All right, so talk to me a little bit about Frasier. The word that I always used to describe that show was farce, because that seemed to be the thing that you guys were so great at writing. It was almost based, in many instances, on mistaken identities or slamming doors, but particularly timing was so key to what happened so often on that show, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, we wanted it to be a sophisticated one-act play. And, you know, you can't do a farce unless you have really, really gifted actors. And it was such a pleasure on Frasier because whatever we threw at these guys, they could do. Kelsey and David Hyde Pierce, John Mahoney, all of them. They were just so great. They had such tremendous timing, and they just understood it. And it's the kind of thing where, like, musicians just have a rhythm, they just hear the beat, they just feel it in their soul. That's the way these guys are with comic timing. So it allowed us to do those kind of shows.
And because they were so good at that, could they also say to you, particularly after several years of inhabiting the character, could they say to you or the other writers, you know what, these two words in the middle mess up this whole thing, and I can't say it this way?
Oh, yes. You know, what we would do is go down and see a run-through every day. The actors would rehearse. We shot on a weekly schedule. There was really 4 days of rehearsal, and then we shot the show in front of a live audience. And after the actors would rehearse during the day, all of the writers would come down to the stage, and there would be a run-through. And we would see what the problems were, what could be better, what needed to be fixed. And we would address some of those issues. And again, the actors are so good that if David Hyde Pierce had a problem saying something, or if David Hyde Pierce couldn't make something funny, we knew we had to go back and fix it.
How hard is it to write for a dog?
Well, now, he would give us notes every draft. He would give us notes every draft. Eddie was terrific. In that, as long as we didn't give him something, you know, too intricate to do, he was great. He had a great trainer who really trained through rewards and love, and we would, you know, do like one Eddie bit a show. But I remember one time we were working on a show and sitting in the writer's room, and somebody pitched something where Eddie goes and plays with a sock, I don't know. And one of the writers said, well, what is Eddie thinking here?
What'd you say?
We said, he's thinking, how can I bite this writer?
Writer, director, producer, Ken Levine here on the Paul Harris Show. We're back in a moment on News Talk 1120 KMOX. And by the way, if you want to read Ken's blog or have links to some of the shows he's worked on, they're up right now on my website, harrisonline.com.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got.
The famous theme from Cheers. One of many sitcoms that Ken Levine worked on with his partner David Isaacs. He's been a writer, producer, of some of the biggest shows in television over the last 30 years, and we're talking about some of them here this afternoon on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Ken, I'm getting email from listeners who loved your work, and they have questions for you about specific shows, but I've only got a couple more minutes to go here, so I'm going to invite you to come back and do another hour with me some other time, and we'll just do listener questions about your shows. Would that be okay?
That'd be great, sure. All right. I love being on KMOX. Are you kidding?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I do want to ask you, though, about your book, It's Gone, No, Wait a Minute, which was about your exploits doing play-by-play and being the number two guy in the play-by-play booth for Baltimore Orioles broadcasts in 1991. First, explain the title of the book, if you would.
Well, unfortunately, that was my home run call in the minors because I couldn't see with the bad lights and all of the signs. So my home run call, more often than not, was, it's gone. No, wait a minute. It's still in play. Oh, wait a minute. I think he caught it. So I thought that would be, you know, a title. You know, every announcer has his own signature home run call, and unfortunately that was mine.
Did you ever come up with a one that you actually were able to use more often than the mistaken one?
I did very briefly. When I went to Baltimore, and my partner was John Miller, who does the Sunday night ESPN games.
Yeah.
Great, great broadcaster.
Yep.
And I thought, what about Elvis has left the building? Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the building.
Uh-huh.
So I used that a couple of times, and it worked out well, and it's like our second week of the season, and we're in Milwaukee. And here was my call. There's a long drive to deep right field, yount back to the track, to the wall. Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis is off the top of the wall. And my partner John just banged his head down on the counter like, oh, my God, what have we gotten ourselves in for? And that was the end of my home run call. Now I'm just happy if I get it right.
Now, did you have the savvy at the time to say, you know what, I'm still a comedy writer, I have to make a note of that one and remember it forever?
Yes, oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Classic stuff. If you want to read what Ken is writing about the writer's strike and about some of his other exploits, and it's not, by the way, all past tense. He's also writing in the present tense about things he observes in the world and on TV and movies as well. I've got a link on harrisonline.com to his blog and much of his other work. It's really a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to having you back on sometime.
Thanks very much.
Ken Levine here on The Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.